Get your finances in order. Be a good steward of what God has given you. This is Money Matters with Caesar Lauper, your guide on financial stewardship. Learn how to create, build, and protect the wealth God has entrusted to you. Now, here's your host of Money Matters, Caesar Lauper.
So welcome to Money Matters, the show that helps you create, build, and protect the wealth that God has entrusted to you. So God bless you greatly, and with every experience in life, you know, I want to thank you for joining me today. Once again, I want to thank all those people who called last week to share their goals, objectives with me. You know, I consider it a blessing, truly a blessing and a privilege to work for you, to act as your counselor, your advisor, to assist you with the proper stewardship of the finances that God has entrusted you with. So may you be blessed through the teachings we share with you today. So today is Valentine's Day, and as I speak to you, and as you hear me, because this is a pre-recorded show, as you hear me, I'm spending the day with my sweetheart, the love of my life. As a matter of fact, we started celebrating the day of love last night with a beautiful dinner, some romantic music, and we plan to spend the whole day just caring for each other. So a happy wife makes a happy life, and a happy husband will make a wife very happy. So to all of you, let me wish you a very happy Valentine's Day, a day of love for each other, love for your family, love for our family, love for our friends, love for our fellow man and humanity as a whole. But above all, love for our God. So my wish for all is that every day be a time for loving one another. And for all of us who live in Ontario, Monday's Family Day, and how fitting it is to have Family Day right after Valentine's Day, I hope you enjoy your day surrounded by your loved ones. So, okay, we've been, over the last couple of weeks, we've been speaking about RSPs, everything you need to know about RSPs. And the reason for that is because it's RSP season again. You know, time flies by. I can't believe that a whole year has gone by, and we're here again. And you know, this is the time you use to maximize your tax refunds and to maximize your retirement nest egg, right? It's to maximize what you're doing for when you get old, when you get there, when you are ready to, you know, stop working every day, and you get to enjoy life and give back to society, right? Give back to your church, give back to humanity. So one show at a time, I'm committed to bringing you more and more understanding about the investment world and the world of personal finance in order to assist you in making the right financial decisions for yourself and for your family. Now, during this sort of mini-series that we've been on, RSPs, which we started several weeks ago and will go on for the next couple of weeks, I'll continue to discuss everything you need to know about RSPs, when to RSP, when not to RSP, how to invest, how to hold those RSP funds in order to assist you with making good decisions for your retirement. Now, there's a lot of information to share with you today, so get a pen and paper ready, take some notes, write your questions down, and as a matter of fact, why don't you go and call your friends and family members and invite them to join us and share a time of learning and a time of creating, building, and protecting wealth. You will also want to take my contact information. You can either email me at caesar.lauper@ipcc.org or call me at 1-866-551-7374. That number again is 1-866-551-7374. And the email address is cesar.lauper@ipcc.org. IPCC stands for Investment Planning Council. Let's start with high level market commentary as we normally do, and see what a couple of things may be affecting your investments right now. So, on the subject of bonds, for those of you who may not know what a bond is, simply put, a bond is a loan to a person, institution, or government at a rate of interest for a period of time. So it's just like lending money to somebody. So over the last several years, with the expectation of inflation related to monetary easing, there's been a constant talk about the risk of bond portfolios. As a result, we have had some turbulence in this asset class, and yet the returns have been no less than above expectations, with some funds performing in the 8% per annum range for the past 5 years. Now, that source is from Morningstar as of January 2015. So what's up with bonds these days? I was listening to an interview with Dr. Schiller. Now, let me give you a little bit about, tell you a little bit about Dr. Robert Schiller. Robert Schiller is a professor of Economics at the Department of Economics and in Kaus Foundation for Research in Economics at Yale University, and Professor of Finance and Fellow at the International Center of Finance, Yale School of Management. He received his BA from the University of Michigan in 1967 and his doctorate degree, PhD in Economics from Massachusetts, from MIT in 1972. He has written on personal markets, finance, innovation, behavioral economics, macroeconomics, real estate, statistical methods, and on public attitudes, opinions, and moral judgments regarding markets. He's written many books, including Market Volatility, Macro Markets, Irrational Exuberance, The New Financial Order, Subprime Solution, Animal Spirits, and others. His book, Finance in Good Society, was published in 2012. And he also was the innovator of the Case-Shiller Home Prices Indices, which is currently being managed by CoreLogic. And he has been a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research since 1980. He was also awarded the Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences jointly with Eugene Fauna and Lars Peter Hansen in 2013. And he served as vice president of the American Economic Association in 2005 and president of the Eastern Economic Association 2006-2007. And he was elected president of the American Economic Association for 2016. Now, he also writes a regular column called Finance in the 21st Century. And he writes Economic View for the New York Times. So all of that, just to say that maybe he's worthwhile, a worthwhile source of information. I'd love to listen to him speak, and certainly try not to miss the interviews that he participates in. So here's what he has to say about the bond market. He said that the bond market is not necessarily driven by excitement, but more so by the disappointment of the low yields that investors are creating. Central banks around the world are keeping rates low, and investors want more and more of a return. And this new normal could last, and then it could crash. So not knowing when that may happen, of course. He said, and I quote, I think it's the wrong time to be investing in the long-term fixed income space. I think it's the wrong time to be investing in long-term fixed income. So there you have it. This could be a sustainable long-term new normal, and then again, it could not. So what he said, once again, keep your balance in check. All right. So we don't know exactly where this market might be going. I think at times it feels like it's just a little bit overdone, and it's a significant correction may be due, and that's true of every asset class out there. So balance is the key here. On another note, the world's 20 largest economies met last week and vowed to address uneven global economic growth by using monetary and fiscal policy to prevent further stagnation. I mean, the political will is there. Political will is there to actually keep this recovery going, right? So in wrapping up the two-day G20 finance ministers meeting in Istanbul, the finance ministers and banks emphasized the need for structural reform in boosting the fragile global economy. In their written communique released last Tuesday, the officials vowed to continuously review our monetary and fiscal policy settings and act decisively if needed. Decisively. So the next... A text also made note of sluggish growth in the Eurozone, of course, that we've been discussing, in Japan, adding that some of the emerging market economies are also slowing down. But they said that the European Central Bank's recent quantitative easing policy, which we also covered last week, would support further recovery in the Eurozone area, which we expect. So on tumbling global oil prices, the finance officials called on countries to take advantage of low prices for further investment. And the leader said that the sharp decline in oil prices will provide some boost to global growth, although it may present varying implications across economies, such as exerting temporary downward pressure on inflation, which would probably keep interest rates down for a significant period of time. So the meeting of the G20 finance leaders, I think, it came at a crucial time, with each economy, of course, operating under different monetary policies. And the bubbles and, you know, the troubles that we're seeing with Greece casting a dark shadow over the Eurozone economy. We'll have to wait until Monday, of course, to see the outcome of the Greek debt negotiations that are underway. In the meantime, interest rates are expected to remain muted for some additional time. And go figure, right? Go figure. The question is, what effect will this have on the markets and, on your portfolios? What effect will that have on house prices and consumer demand? And the answer is simple, okay? It's easy. here's the answer. Nobody knows, really. Nobody really knows. We have expectations, of course, with interest rates being so low that housing demand would maybe continue here in Canada. But really anything can happen at any time. And this is why a balanced portfolio that is nimble and current in being rebalanced on an ongoing basis is so important. You know, this kind of reminds me of the 70s when, the markets were just all over the place and people, a lot of volatility. And I think that when there's such amount of volatility that the markets are really presenting to those that really know what's going on, it presents opportunities regularly. So we need to be nimble, right? We need to be able to sell an overpriced stock perhaps and then buy something that is showing good value, because as I've always said, that is the only way of investing, value investing. That's what we subscribe to. So, over the last couple of weeks, we have been discussing the importance of understanding your marginal tax rate and making an RSP contribution and how that may affect your tax refunds. We discussed how you should look at the tax refunds, that they are really temporary loans. We've said that for the most part, because at some point in the future, you will have to return the same amount you got back or more, and very rarely less than you received. However, some or all of what you get back as a result of you participating in an RSP is really a loan that is payable in full in the future. So we also discussed that you need to consider how long it will be before you need to draw the money out of an RSP if you are going to invest in an RSP. We discussed the first-time home buyer's plan. We discussed the lifelong learning plan that can be used within the RSP rules. We discussed RRIF rules, so RIF rules, converting RRSPs into RIFs, how to invest in RRSPs. We talked about withholding taxes and how they work. We discussed the importance of beneficiary proper beneficiary appointments and considerations for that. We also discussed the various situations where you should never, ever buy an RSP. And we discussed the great RSP debates such as, should I buy an RSP or put money towards my mortgage? Is it better to put money in an RSP or a tax-sheltered open investment? And should you put your funds in an RSP or would a TFSA be better for you? If you missed any of that, you're welcome to give us a call and we'll give you a copy of those programs. We also concluded that if you're not sure what to start with, okay, then it is better to start with the TFSA. Why? Because it gives you more flexibility. RSPs are better for retirement only once you have built a solid financial foundation to meet any potential emergency that you may face in the future. You may have a question in your mind right now. You may have several questions. Maybe you're asking, what should I do? What would give me a better result? So to answer your questions on how to optimize your financial situation, take our offer. We will conduct a personal analysis of where you are currently and give you the answer you need to optimize your financial health. And to do that, simply call 1-866-551-7374. That number again is 1-866-551-7374. Everyone should be calling. Okay, everyone should be calling. We're going to go into a short commercial break, and when we come back, we'll continue discussing everything you need to know about RRSPs and, how important that is, right? Because, some people are just, you shouldn't be putting money into an RSP, not at all. You should know the limitations that an RSP actually offers you and then the advantages that it offers you. But you need to really weigh whether or not an RSP is the best solution, long-term solution for yourself and your family. So let's go to a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue discussing everything you need to know about RRSPs. We'll be right back. All right, so welcome back to Money Matters, the show that helps you create, build, and protect wealth, the wealth that you've been entrusted with. So we're talking about RSPs, everything you need to know about RSPs, and you know, rule number one about that is don't lose money by deciding to invest in an RSP. Don't pay more tax by using an RSP, and I've seen several situations where people are doing that. You know, people will say, well, you know, how does that happen? How does that happen? Well, how it happens is because you're putting money in when you're in a low tax bracket and you're taking it out when you're in a higher tax bracket. Or maybe you're putting it in into an RSP, putting your money into an RSP when you don't have the, you know, a solid foundation that will help you meet any emergency. So an emergency comes up and people will take the money out of the RSP and then they put themselves in a higher tax bracket paying more taxes than they save. So rule number one, don't lose money by deciding to invest in an RSP. Don't pay more tax by using an RSP. So if your marginal tax rate at the time of contribution, okay, if your marginal tax rate at the time of contribution is likely to be equal or lower than what your marginal tax rate should be at the time of withdrawal, then RSPs do not make sense. If, on the other hand, your marginal tax rate at the time of contribution is likely to be greater than your marginal tax rate at time of withdrawal, then the RSP makes sense. As long as, of course, you've met the other criteria, right? Making sure you have that solid foundation. All right, so as a reminder, the deadline to receive your tax deduction for 2014, reminder, the deadline for RSP tax contribution is always 60 days after the end of the previous year. So to be eligible for a deduction for 2014 tax year this year, the deadline is March the 2nd, 2015. Consult your financial institutions about how they are able to accommodate these deadlines. Some institutions are able to take your contributions right till midnight of March the 2nd, as long as you bring it into the institution itself. Or some other institutions are just, you know, they're not equipped, so they need you to have the funds in sooner. So make sure that you consult that, okay, so you don't miss out. All right, now you can hold your RSPs or RIFs or any other account in a self-directed account, okay? A self-directed account is known as a nominee account, and that's where, you know, an institution holds the money on your behalf. So let's discuss the advantages of self-directed RSPs. All right, so, you know, we know that the mutual fund market has grown exponentially. I remember way back in 1984, mutual funds were, what? What is that, right? You know, many people didn't really know what it was to be investing in a mutual fund. Now everybody knows a mutual fund. And equity and equity fund investing has become more and more popular, and I think that more and more investors are becoming more knowledgeable than ever before. And, you know, as a result of shows like this, you know, where we're, our job, our objective is to teach you more and more about investments. So we now have more investment choices than we have ever had. And, you know, we have, as an example, over, you know, last time I looked, there's like, you know, 15,000 different investment funds available in the marketplace, you know, distributed by different, you know, they have different, you know, the packaging, but there's a lot out there. There's so much, and I don't think we've had this much choice before in investing, and of course the access that we have to information is you know, it's endless, right? Endless. And I think for these reasons, self-directed RSPs have become more popular than ever before as well. In my opinion, if you have maybe over $50,000 and you like to have some diversification in your portfolio, then you should consider the merits of a self-directed RSP. This, of course, threshold is not, carved in stone. You could have maybe $30,000, or maybe you can have $200,000. It all depends on what you want to do, how you want to manage your RSPs. And the threshold to consider a self-directed RSP will depend on each individual investor's personal situation and how much trading you do and, you know, what asset classes you want to hold, you know, how much diversification you want to have within your RSP. So it all depends. And one of the things you got to look at, of course, when you're considering a self-directed RSP is the cost of that, right? So a self-directed RSP needs to use a trustee. So most self-directed RSPs have an annual trustee fee, And this fee is paid to the trustee to cover the administrative costs, of course, of overseeing the RSP itself. In many cases, the trustee only makes income through these fees alone, so these are very important to them. And the annual trustee fees range from as low as zero, if you have multiple accounts with them, to maybe $25 to $250 a year. So you need to take a look and see and do a cost analysis to decide. After you've decided that a self-directed RSP makes sense for you, then you need to decide which trustee to use. So, you know, the other thing is you need to also consider the overall cost, the added cost as a percentage of your investments of that trustee fee. So let's say, for example, the fee is $125 and you still have that $50,000 investment. So your fee represents about 27 basis points, so 0.27% of the total portfolio. You should be really adding that to your MERs, the overall cost of managing your funds, to make accurate comparisons. So let's talk about the benefits of the self-directed RRSPs, the self-directed accounts. First of all, I think that the one of the biggest benefits is the fact that you can have a consolidated statement. You know, nothing is worse than getting, you know, I don't know, 10, I've seen some people get like 15 different statements for their RRSPs, and it kind of, you know, keeps it, makes it very difficult to keep track of the overall performance of the portfolio and where exactly your money is. So you're getting investment statements from XYZ company and ABC company and LMF company or whatever. And so you one of the benefits is that you would have one consolidated statement. And it makes, of course, that reporting a lot easier. And you will have one statement for each RSP, regardless of how many financial institutions you're dealing with. And, you know, you've heard me say many times that when you put a portfolio together, okay, your portfolio will start, putting the portfolio itself together will start with making a decision as to what geographical allocation you'll have in that portfolio. So how much are you going to have in U.S. and markets and European markets, international markets, maybe a little bit, you know, some Canadian. And then once you decide that, then you're going to decide, you know, what sort of asset allocation you're going to have within that geographical allocation. So you're going to say, I'm going to have, you know, X number of percent in equities within that, and then there's sectors. And, of course, once you've done that, then you decide that what money managers are going to be taking care of each of those pieces of the pie of your portfolio. And, of course, we know that not every money manager, best money manager in each of those asset classes, resides or works in one financial institution. So you will probably decide that you want to have you know, the equity, Canadian equity portion of your portfolio managed by the expert, one of the best people in that area, and you select that to be, you know, XYZ individual working with company A. And maybe the bond portfolio of your Canadian exposure will be with, you know, company B. And then you have company C for your American and so on and so forth. So by doing that, then, of course, you're going to have several statements coming in for different companies for each of the portions of your portfolios. To have that consolidation makes a lot of sense. It makes it a heck of a lot easier to track, right? So product consolidation is a second point, and because you're dealing with different financial institutions, then and you know, it'll be a lot easier to manage. The other thing is number three is easier administration. The administration of a self-directed plan is centralized. Okay, so it makes it easier to trade investments, particularly when you're moving money between financial institutions. For example, let's say that you have an investment with ABC Bank, and you want to sell that investment to move it to Institution B. So if these accounts are not self-directed, then you have to sell the investment in Financial Institution A, and then you have to go and open an account at Financial Institution B. And then finally, you will deposit the proceeds of the sale of Investment A into Investment B. Now, this process can take days sometimes. If you had the same, if you made the same decision within a self-directed account, you can complete the transaction without having to open different accounts, closing accounts, maybe subjecting yourself to those fees, and it just makes it a heck of a lot more efficient and time-saving, and you're not missing days in the market as a result of doing that. It's just a lot quicker. So that's another advantage. The other advantage is product selection. So there are a number of products investments that qualify for self-directed RSPs, and you can choose from conventional investments such as GICs, bonds, mutual funds, even segregated funds that are sold through insurance companies. But self-directed RSPs also allow you to invest in mortgages if you would want, or maybe small business corporations or other non-conventional investments. So self-directed RSPs do give you a choice, and it gives you control over the product selection. So where if you had your investments in a client name, then you would have, not only different product, but also different financial institutions and their classification. So makes a lot of sense than if you are diversifying by product and you're diversifying by geographical allocation, you're diversifying by asset allocation, that you have just one consolidated report. Diversification by company, of course. I've always believed that no single company has all of the best product in the marketplace. In fact, according to my personal research, most companies have one or two good products, and every company has some bad products. So if you have all of your investments with one company alone, you're likely to have a good product and bad ones, right? So one of the goals of having a self-directed RSP is to try to determine the strengths of the different companies and what they're really good at, and try to select the products that play to their strengths. So diversification by company product is best done through this self-directed plan. Now, the other part is managing this foreign content. So I started saying that, the first decision you're probably going to make is geographical allocation. So foreign content is monitored on a plan-by-plan basis. If you are dealing with more than one financial institution and you've determined that you want to have no more than, say, 30% U.S. content, then, that's hard to manage that if you have different accounts, different products, with different statements coming in. You will have to add it all up and then try to get the exact exposure to the U.S. that each of these investments have, and then the calculation can be daunting. So having the self-directed RSP makes foreign content monitoring much easier because you only have to monitor it from one source. And these self-directed plans also have the added benefit of making it easier to choose the foreign content investments, and you can better manage your exposure to certain geographical allocations. And the next benefit is the conversion to a RIF. So if you're closer to age 71 and you have your RSPs with different financial institutions, if you're retirement and you're near retirement, many experts advise that you consider consolidating all of your investments into fewer plans. And of course, converting everything to a self-directed RSP, to a self-directed RIF, makes this whole process seamless. And let me tell you, I've had several clients turn 71 this year and it's just one ticket, and we convert everything, all the RSPs into RIFs. So personally, my personal opinion is, I'm a strong advocate of self-directed RSPs. I have one myself, and the more money you have in RSPs, the more it makes sense to open one of these up. So the list of benefits is not exhaustive, of course, and will not apply to everyone. So take the time to determine if these benefits apply to you, if it's something you really want to have. And the first step to determining if you should have a self-directed RSP is, I think, diversification, right? So not all self-directed RSPs, of course, are the same. If you decide that a self-directed RSP is right for you, then you should shop around, do your homework, give us a call. We'll tell you the different trustees you can use and what the cost of each of those are. You need to consider if they have any trading costs or transfer out fees or the registration, partial withdrawal fees, and that sort of thing, because you may need to do that, right? If you have, you can have self-directed RSPs, but not only RSPs, you could also have a self-directed TFSA, and then you may want to withdraw some of those funds out of the account. Are there any fees associated with making those withdrawals? Make sure that you understand that before you enter into an agreement to open one up, because once you open one up and then, you know, you want to close it later on, there will be a close-up fee. You need to know what that is, okay? So, finally, having a self-directed RSP does not mean you do everything by yourself, okay? Just because the name is self-directed RSP doesn't mean you make every decision on your own. As a matter of fact, I believe that if you do everything yourself, you will be doing yourself a disservice if you do your own investment decision. I think that advice and guidance add significant value to your financial wealth. So make sure that you do that through the proper channels and that you use an advisor to set one up. So to do that, give us a call, 1-800-551-7374. Okay, so now let's say that you've decided to hold your RSP account within a self-directed plan. And what are you going to do now? Well, you need to invest that, right? So how do you determine that? How do you start making a decision as to where to invest, how to allocate your funds? And I think that the first step to making good RSP decisions or investment decisions is figuring out if making a contribution into an RSP is the right action for you in the first place. Now, if you've decided that making a contribution makes sense, then you now have to figure out where to invest those funds. And to do that, you need to determine first, where you are in that investment cycle. And when you're first starting out, you're probably want to keep things relatively simple. You need some guidance to determine when and how to enter the investment market and how risky your investment should be. You should get some guidance on that. You might buy one or two investments at the same financial institution just to keep it simple, because maybe you're not, you know, putting a lot of money into your plan. You may not want to use a self-directed plan if you already got some RSPs. And you've got enough, you know, maybe 50,000, 40,000, you want to use a self-directed RSP because you want to be more sophisticated, more diversified, so making the decision as to where to invest is, you have to determine where you are in the investment cycle. So if you're just starting out, like I said, you want to keep things simple. If you've got some investments already, then you want to make sure that you have the proper diversification and the guidance to do that. Now, so, you know, there's always that debate, right? You know, I want to do it myself. I'm going to invest myself, or do I need an advisor? Does an advisor really, really add any benefit to your plan over time? And although I think that many people can still benefit from using advisors, some do-it-yourselfers today do have a lot of tools and information to do it on their own, but they don't have all the information that's necessary to maximize the potential growth of their investments because of tax rules and access to product and that sort of thing. So using an advisor to me is, of course, I am one, but using an advisor really adds a significant amount of wealth over time. You know, I can't, I can go on and on and on about the examples of clients that have come to our office where we've taken a look at their situation, we've analyzed it, and within the first meeting, they've made thousands of dollars, just by changing things around, okay? We're not even talking about fees. We're not even discussing the savings we can provide to a client. If that was, you know, the main number one thing, but it's not just that, okay? Yes, you do save money with us. Yes, you do lower your overall management costs. Yes, that happens, but more importantly is the planning process and how by just reallocating the funds you already have, you can maximize your wealth. By reducing taxes that you would pay either now or taxes you might have to pay in the future, just overall increasing your wealth. So whether you use an advisor or not, here are some tips that I'm always talking about when it comes to investing. Tips that I always talk about when it comes to investing. So why don't we take a short break and then we'll get into that. Reminder, number to call is 1-866-551-7374. Again, 1-866-551-7374. Or you can email me at caesar@ipcc.org. That's caesar.laupr at itcc.org. Okay, so we'll take a short break, and when we get back, we'll talk about some tips for investing. We'll see you in 2 minutes. All right, so welcome back to Money Matters, the show that helps you create, build, and protect wealth. So we're talking about RRSPs, everything you need to know about RRSPs, and decisions, on how to make investment decisions. So, number one, I think you need to develop a framework, right? So there's a lot of noise, a lot of confusion. There's too much choice out there, and the secret to investment success, I think, is to have a simple framework or a plan of action. And when I give advice, I always talk about the merits of having a plan. As a matter of fact, with many people coming to our office for the first time, I ask them to bring their financial plan just so that we can see. It's amazing how many people don't have one, right? How many people don't have an actual financial plan at all? None. Zero. So what track do you have to run on if you don't have a financial plan that's written? Where is your framework? So you need to know what your required rate of return is. When I give investment advice, I always talk about the need to have that plan. You need to have a plan in order to know what your investment portfolio needs to produce for you every year, right? You need to know, and get that, right? You need to know what your investment portfolio needs to produce for you every year. You need to know what your required rate of return is. Without a required investment return, you may be making the wrong decisions. You don't know what level of risk you need to have your portfolio take or to be exposed to. Without it, you're really living by a trial and error kind of strategy, that kind of a wing it strategy, right? That only leads to disappointing results. And when it comes to if you're doing that, I think, you might as well just go to the casino if you're going to be doing that. You have no plan. You need to have a plan. You need to have a plan in order to know where you need to get to and then how much your portfolio is required to return. And then that way you can make a decision as to how much risk you should be exposing your portfolio to. And many people are just putting their portfolios through undue risk, and then disappointing results, right? So when it comes to an investment plan, Mr. Buffett said it best, and he gave two timeless pieces of advice. Okay, number one was this. He said, to invest successfully over a lifetime does not require stratospheric IQ, unusual business insight, or inside information. What is needed is a sound intellectual framework for making decisions and the ability to keep emotions from corroding that framework. That was number one. Very important. Have a plan. Number two, he said that there are two rules for investing. Number one, don't lose money. And rule number two is, don't forget rule number one. Yeah, it's all about structure, framework, planning, and making the right decision about your investments. So what does your financial plan look like? What does your framework look like? You need one, okay? Number two is keep it simple. There's no shortage of information out there. There's so much information. I think it becomes overwhelming and, many times very confusing. What do you look for when you see all this, right? Well, all these investment choices. What should you be? What should your filters be in order for you to be able to recognize a good investment? So we have so much choice that it can become, I think, paralyzing, and it refrains us from making decisions, right? So there's something to be said about keeping things simple. If you think about it, the strategies that seem to stand the test of time, okay, the strategies that have stood the test of time are the ones that are most simple. It's also so much easier to manage a simple portfolio. Value investing, dividend paying solutions, buying strong businesses with sustainable delivery frameworks in a good growth sector with good barriers to entry, an excellent management team, and businesses that are trading at a discounted price to their intrinsic value. Okay, there you go. It's simple, repeatable. All you need is the information and the skill level to be able to value the businesses properly and buy them at a discount, to be able to recognize whether or not they're out there being sold at a discount. How do you do that? Well, you need the expertise. You need the experience. You need the education, right? You need to be able to value each of these companies in order to know whether or not they are trading at a discount. Now, listen, if you buy something that is a discount, it's selling below its actual value. You're going to make money. All right, so the other thing is, don't chase performance. According to research, chasing performance really works about 15% of the time. I think I've given examples. I learned about that very early in life when I walked into a branch of a bank, one name the bank, and there was a huge sign, right? You know, you walk and you're speaking to the teller, and there's a huge sign behind the teller, and it says, investment fund returns 30% in the last 12 months. I go, man, that's awesome. That's great. I want that kind of return, right? So you put your money into that, and then what do you know? Next 12 months, not the same result, right? Maybe a negative result. not a good experience when you're investing for the first time. So don't chase returns, because chasing the returns doesn't work out in the long term. Choosing the top performer in 1 year will result in being a top performing for the following year only 15% of the time. So that means that you have 85% of the time it does not work out well. So those are not good odds. And as I mentioned, I learned that a very, very early stage. So the other thing about that is you... you have to watch your fees. Okay, so fees do matter, and I think many people that I meet have no clue what they are paying in fees. You know, study after study has shown that fees have a direct impact on your long-term performance. Your fees and the value you're getting for what you're paying, you need to know what that is. So. The other part is number five is stay engaged, right? Of course, I suspect that money is important to you. So if you have to care about your money enough, then you need to be engaged. You need to be engaged. Stay engaged. It takes hard work to make money, so you need to invest some time into protecting and managing it yourself. Listen, nobody's going to care more about your investments than yourself. Of course, the management team is always looking after it. But you need to know what's going on. You need to know what's going on within your portfolio, how it's performing, what the risks are, all the time. So stay engaged and be vigilant of your investing, okay? Be vigilant of your investments. Another thing is, I think when if you're married, you should be investing together. One of the challenges of the privacy laws and the current regulatory system is the bias for spouses to invest on an individual basis. So, not for spouses to be investing together. I've talked about the challenges of that. I think it's very, very important for husband and wife to know exactly what's going on with their investments together, right? So that, whatever you do, whatever one person does affects the other. You may think it does not, but it directly or indirectly will affect the other person. So I think that when a couple goes to buy an RSP, yes, the company must keep the financial institution must keep the accounts separate, and they each must acknowledge separate risk tolerances, time horizons, and investment objectives for each other. But I think that the couple must come in together, and I think that the plan must be a plan that is put together for the benefit of both. Not only for the benefit of both, for the benefit of each other, for the benefit of the family, for the benefit of the children, for the benefit of whoever that charitable organization may benefit from your investments in the long term. So. Knowing, the other thing is that I find that when couples come together, then they're both aware of what's going on, right? There's nothing, and I've had situations where, the husband has come in, he's made all the decisions, taken the paperwork back, the wife ends up following up on, or just doing whatever the husband tells her to do, and she doesn't really fully understand. You need to know, you need to be involved. You need to understand how your investments are working, and then, how to take control of them yourself if you ever have to. So make sure that you do that. Okay, keep each other informed of what's going on, and better yet, just come in together. Don't make any decision on your own, but make the decisions together. So should you be in an aggressive or conservative portfolio? When it comes to investing. I think that one spouse may be more aggressive than the other, and yet that decision to be more aggressive in your portfolio just because one particular party is more aggressive, you know, that will affect the more conservative party, right? So again, compromising there, and I think that the balanced portfolio will do the best job for both. So another thing is to consider how your portfolio should look like. Consider how whether you want the portfolio to be more of a income portfolio. Consider whether you want the portfolio to be producing more of an interest rate of return, or you want dividends or capital gains. I think that is crucial, and it is very, very important for you to put those checkpoints in place. I think you need to have a portfolio that will meet both your needs in the long term. Because in the end, you know, if one passes away, the other one's going to be taking that RSP, right? So make sure that it fits, it fits both of you. So there's a question, though, that comes up. What happens to your RSPs if you pass away, if one of them passes away, one of the couple passes away? Well, when we think of RSP planning, we often think about whether it makes sense to buy RSPs or how to invest in those RSPs. These are questions that we've addressed over the past few shows. So one question we may not think about addressing always is what happens to your RSP when you pass away. How should that be structured? And although it's not something that we like to talk about, we don't like to think about, we don't like to address, we should be addressing at least once a year, especially when it comes to the taxation of those RSPs. I've often said when people come into my office and show me their RSP statements that, you know, the money you have in that RSP, that statement, it says, you know, it's got a value, maybe it's got $500,000 in it, and it's got your name, and you think $500,000 is yours. Well, you know, it's not, right? It's not. You know, half of that, maybe, a good chunk of that anyways, is not yours. It belongs to the government. It belongs to the taxman, right? So, but there are things you could do to minimize the destructive effects of taxation in your portfolio, and you need to be aware of what those strategies are that could reduce the taxes that you pay in your RSP once you liquidate them, or, you know, once you pass away, right? So obviously when you set up a beneficiary appointment or you appoint a beneficiary in your RSP, that that beneficiary will get those funds, but, you know, taxes are still due and payable. So we're going to be addressing that and many other subjects about who can be a beneficiary, how to properly set that up, the benefits of having segregated funds when it comes to your RSPs as well, and how to minimize the tax of an RSP when you pass away, and even when you're taking an income once you RIF it. So if you have any questions about this and you want some advice and guidance and how to properly put together, how to properly structure your RSPs, give us a call. The number to call is 1-866-551-7374. Again, 1-866-551-7374. I want to thank you for having been with me today. I want to wish you all a very, very happy Valentine's again. And welcome. Give us a call, 1-866-551-7374. We'll be more than happy. It is a privilege to be your guide, your counselor, your advisor when it comes to managing your investments. So with that, I invite you to join me again next Saturday at the same time. And listen, invite your friends and your family members to listen in and learn how to create, build, and protect the wealth you've been entrusted with. So until next Saturday, may God lead your ways.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Caesar Lauffer. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next week to learn more about how to create, build, and protect the wealth God has entrusted to you.